Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in-store or online at harrycurry.com. Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five one is our text number. Siobhan de Peyre. Siobhan, good afternoon and congratulations. I've just given birth in the last couple
of weeks to a
new baby boy, Turin. But it wasn't a home birth, it was a free birth. What's the difference, Siobhan, and why?
The difference is there's no midwife attending me. And the reason why is I wasn't able to get a midwife. Really, after a C-section, you can't have a home birth under the HSC insurance requirements.
Okay.
So this was my third child, and with the last one, I had a C-section. Now, previously, you could, previous to 2007, but when the stricter insurance requirements came in, they just stopped covering that. So I was just in the position where it was either the hospital or at home on my own with my husband.
Yeah, and you, Siobhan, you couldn't have a midwife at home with you because he or she would not be insured.
That's it. The HSC requires, they have quite strict criteria.
Yeah.
Now, there's the HSC home birth service. There's also private midwives, and they cover, so it's quite a limited service anyway, the home birth service.
Yeah.
I'd previously wanted one, but it just wasn't covered in the area when we were living in Kerry. So there's all, yeah, there's it's a tough enough one to get a home birth in Ireland. You know, it's such, I think there's less than 20 community midwives.
Okay, so what is the difference, Siobhan, between a free birth and a home birth?
Well, the main difference being the being assisted and unassisted with a midwife with you or not. Now, in fairness, the free birth can have a midwife. I mean, it's outside of, we'd say, yes, a licensed midwife. A midwife within the insurance medical system, that system. Because there is birth keepers, people who are midwives, there are actually midwives who have left their jobs to attend free births. And the free birth is sort of the name they've given to this movement of women who are doing that now, who are just birthing outside of the medical system, using midwifery experience and midwifery support, but not within the system.
And if anything, God forbid, did go wrong, not that insurance would make any difference, but but in your case, in your free birth, which seems to be the majority of free birth, there is no medical. It is deliberately unassisted by any medic in any shape or form.
That's right.
Okay, and do you at any stage have to, when you become pregnant, do you attend a maternity unit, or do you tell anybody in the medical system, or can you just walk away, so to speak, naturally?
You can just work away naturally.
Okay.
I mean, I'm lucky in that I know a lot of doulas and women and birthed mothers who have birthed children, and I know other free birthers. I'm part of the Free Birth Society, and I have the manual. You know, I mean, I've been in this culture for a while, and there's a lot of an awful lot of medical knowledge around, but you know, not licensed medical knowledge, which is the only thing that counts in the, you know, insurance paradigm.
When you say licensed medical knowledge, what you mean is verified medical knowledge. People have gone through exams and been examined and sat through supervision. Like, licensed does mean that they're qualified.
Yeah, I mean
yeah.
Licensed. I mean,
yeah.
For me, qualified is somebody who has the experience of attending births. And if she hasn't got a license, I would still consider her very credible and qualified. If a woman has, a midwife has attended 20 births, but hasn't got a license or been through a medical college, I certainly would consider her qualified.
Yeah, but a woman who attends, or a man who attends 20 births, that doesn't make them a qualified midwife.
They're the kind of person I want there. I mean, you know, within the Irish tradition, training system, there's no community element. So all the midwives that go through the Irish training system actually only have a hospital setting, an obstetric hospital medicalized model setting. That's all they know. Whereas somebody who's coming from a community background, she may not have the training, but she's got the experience of what goes on in the home. So from my, I suppose, world view, she would be much more qualified to attend my birth than a trained medical professional.
Okay. Siobhan, and take me through, if you can, please. And I'm very conscious that you've just recently had a baby, so appreciate your contribution and talking today. Siobhan, take me through the actual day that it happened, and were you worried or did you get scared at any stage?
No. I mean, I was prepared mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, in all those ways, you know. This time, I wasn't keeping it quiet, you know. I didn't feel I needed to hide my intentions, you know, because you have more confidence as well as a third-time mother. And I suppose it's kind of 7 years since my first birth, and I've spoken to so many women about their births and their birth experience, and the more I learn, the more I become assured in my view that a hospital isn't a place for a birthing mother. And as it becomes more medicalized, that view strengthens. And so in the preparation, we read the free birth manual. So you read basically all the literature tells you that your body is designed to give birth unassisted. You just have to believe this. And there's a conditioning there that we get from society that you need medical intervention, or you need assistance from a medical profession. It's so deeply ingrained that it goes largely unquestioned, and most women would almost be afraid to give birth without that medical professional there. But when you start to read all this birth literature that's out there from other sources, you realise that birth is the most natural thing in the world. So why would the most natural thing in the world be the most dangerous if we're to believe that medical active management of birth model? It's the most natural, it's something your body can do, but the reason that it becomes so life and death is when there is intervention, because the intervention is what causes these domino effects. So I suppose I had that trust, and so I went into the day, and when the pre-labour started, it was all very... yeah, there was no worries for me. You know, the labour itself took longer.
Okay.
Took longer than I thought, but
that's a real mad question, isn't it? Because the pain levels in men, as you know, are much lower. Pain resistance barriers in men are much pain threshold in men is much lower than women. Were you in pain, Siobhan?
You know, you couldn't call it pain, Joe. It's a thing, like, it's intense. But you know, after birth, where you're contracting, like when the uterus is expanding, it's really intense. Like, what makes it extremely painful, I think, is the inducement. Like a lot of women I spoke to, when you get those inducements to speed it up, your body literally has to do in half an hour what might naturally take 5 hours. And so it's like really intense and painful. And that's when you go into all the pain medication and epidurals and things like that. But if you stay outside of the inducements and let it unfold naturally, I wouldn't call it painful. The afterbirth, where the uterus is contracting, that was painful. It was so painful, I had waves of nausea with it. But I couldn't, it was intense, not painful. Okay.
And had you a plan B, Siobhan, yourself and Dermot? Had you a plan B if things can go wrong in childbirth? It's a big, big procedure.
Certainly, yeah. I know. I mean, if things had gone wrong, we would have gone to the hospital.
And how far away from the hospital are you?
A half an hour.
Okay, so that helps. And that's a maternity unit.
There's a maternity unit there.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a help. Did that maternity unit know you were giving birth?
No, they didn't.
Okay, so if
I didn't deal with them at all.
Okay. And are you not obliged to deal with them at all?
You're not obliged, no. Okay. And this is, this is something that kind of women need to know too, like, you know, to regain our authority. As mothers and as birthing mothers, it's been taken away from us a lot. You know, they often hear women say, the doctor says I'm not allowed to home birth. The doctor says I'm not allowed to gestate 40 weeks. I have to go in. I'm not allowed. And it's like, you are allowed. You're you're not only allowed,
but with your second child, you did go to hospital.
certainly I didn't. I was very glad of them.
Well, tell us what happened.
Well, it was a placenta previa.
Okay.
And
it was a home birth. Was there a midwife present? Was an assisted
home?
No,
it wasn't. I kind of arranged it previous because at 36 weeks there was a bleed. So that was an indicator then that once I went in for the scan, then I knew that it couldn't, you know, they showed the previa. So they were saying, okay, like this looks like it's going to need a C-section, but it can move. It means that the placenta is blocking the cervix. Mm. Now, it can move right up, and even the child has been known to nudge past it. It's just you don't know until the very end, you know. The labour started at home, but I went in then because I knew that there was a previa there. And, I went in and we waited then for the C-section morning.
Like, how did you make that decision to go in for medical assistance?
Well, I had a feeling in my body, you know, it was just a feeling. It was a feeling like now's the time.
It wasn't the medic telling you have to go, Siobhan.
No, it wasn't. Okay. I had their advice. I had my own advice. I had the advice of the Pre-Birth Society. I had as much advice as I could possibly. And I suppose the thing that isn't taken into account when you're in the hospital, in the medic, is the intuition. Your intuition as a woman and the person who is occupying the body, you feel when there's something wrong with the body, the alarm bells go off.
Okay.
And when you don't have that, you know you're grand, you know.
And how soon after Tiran was born, do you have to notify the authorities or do you?
You have to register the child within the first 3 months, which we will do. We called into the doctor and got the child just checked, you know. That's grand too. You know, I can go to the public health nurse and get the hearing test. I might do that. I think I might do that. So there's services we can still avail of. You're not totally outside the system. I think for women who are considering free birth, the questions you're asking are very good because there's the fear of, is it legal? Am I allowed? You know. And it's not the end of the world. It's not such a big deal. An awful lot of women who home birth don't end up calling the midwives even, you know. So an awful lot of women are free birthing but not calling it that. And you can, you know, the system is there to support us and we can use the services of it. But we can still stay within our own authority as birthing mothers.
But I'm thinking, Siobhan, if God forbid you had to phone your nearest maternity hospital, you say is half an hour away, on the day that Tiran was born, and you said, I need to come in, and they'd say, who are you? We've no record of you. What? And I know you'd say, you'd probably ring an ambulance or whatever, but they would have no knowledge of you, no prior knowledge. Now, is that irrelevant, is it?
It's not relevant at all. They take care of you.
You
know, they mightn't be so well disposed towards you, like, which was the case with Ishna. But I mean, you know, this is it, you see. Their function is for emergency medicine or emergency intervention or something like that, you know. So most people just show up in their door anyway, you know.
But a lot of procedures in a hospital are elective procedures. The majority
of course,
are procedures.
But it is said that you should only need medical intervention in a birth if it's an emergency. Now, it's become normalised that we're getting medical interventions in non-emergency births. That has become normalised in Ireland and across the world. And this is why this counterculture is moving now.
And how many, because the studies on home births show it's increasing, but it's still it's well into the 90% that actually have their baby in a maternity unit. And then there's a small percentage of home births. Have we any information on free births? How would we know?
No, but I think they started counting it this year.
Okay.
No, but previously not. There wasn't any record. I mean, there's more than 90. It's about 99%, Joe, that are in hospital.
Okay.
And I mean, the AIMS, that Maternity Rights Association, they did a survey and 43% of women said they'd like a home birth. But still, it's less than 1% that actually have one. So you have a huge number of women out there who would love to have a home birth.
So would it be fair to say that if there's less than 1% home births, then it's 0.1% who are free birthing?
It could be. Could that be even that lovely.
Okay, stay there. Joe at RT.ie. Stay there, Siobhan, please. And congratulations on your third baby. Joe at RT.ie, 51551. Barry, you're listening. I know your mother was involved in midwifery, but what do you think of free birthing? Had you ever heard of it before, Barry?
Hello, Joe. Good afternoon.
Go ahead. Have you ever heard of free birthing?
I hadn't, Joe. No, I had never heard of free birthing. No, never heard of it until it came up on the promo this morning.
So what do you think of it?
Well, it sounds great in one way, but then the minute something goes wrong, straight away you're looking for qualified medical backup, and you need that in a big way. And then how long is that going to take to get to you? So at the best word I would say is it's highly risky. I wouldn't be in favor of that at all for anyone. If I did have grandchildren who were looking at that.
Well, let me put that. Siobhan, Barry's point is it's highly risky, he believes.
This is the sort of when you're dealing with the worst case scenario, the worst case scenario, which may affect 0.2%, 0.5%. But you've got the other 95% going into a hospital that's equipped to deal with the worst case scenario. So you're looking. Now, most births, you take that responsibility when you birth at home. You take that responsibility when you cross the road. You know, there's a saying in midwifery, birth is as safe as life is. Yeah, you know, think about that. There is risk in life. And this risk paradigm, where all our actions should be governed by how risky, by the worst case scenario, if anything happened, God forbid. So we better not do it, because if anything happened, God forbid. This risk paradigm that the insurance companies are dictating the minutiae of our lives, this is where we have to move away from. And this is what is governing our hospitals.
But you
now.
Say, but you and told me earlier, Siobhan, you had placenta previa yourself. You could have died from that.
Yes, and a scan picked it up and I went in. And the system was there to serve me. You know, I mean, there's a bleed with placenta previa. There's a big bleed. You know something's wrong. I knew something was wrong in my body. The signs were there. You don't just, you know, your body just doesn't collapse. You get the signs, like you have the symptoms. And then when you have the symptoms, you go to a doctor.
If you were equipped, either educationally or whatever, to understand the symptoms. Experience in your case to understand symptoms. And
well, no, you don't need to be a doctor to know that something's wrong. I mean, you'd feel pain, you'd see blood. If it was a breech position, say for the baby, you could physically see that the child
and
Siobhan, wasn't in that shape.
Do you go to a doctor for anything? If you have a flu or, God forbid, a broken arm or something, would you go to a hospital?
Broken arm, I might. I think the hospital has a limited function for things like broken bones now. And some emergency. But for chronic sicknesses, I don't think they have a great role, because they treat they don't treat the root of the sickness. They treat the symptoms.
What about a cancer?
I wouldn't be in favour of chemotherapy and radiation and those particular treatments. No,
I'd
go at it from an alternative.
Okay.
I restore the system. You know,
a blood transfusion. Would you accept a blood transfusion?
I suppose I would if I needed one, yeah.
Okay. Barry, do you want to... you cannot deny the clarity of Siobhan in her beliefs.
Oh, no.
She believes in deliberately... this might be deliberately unassisted birth. And she's not... she's not overly keen on any medical assistance or whatever if she can do it herself through various alternative methods or whatever.
No, I will say that she's more than entitled to hold those beliefs, but it's just something I wouldn't have had total faith in. I'd rather have, I suppose, the fail-safe system behind me of the medical people.
Okay. Now, your aunt, Madge May O'Neill, Nurse May, as she was known, she was a pretty mobile and able midwife, wasn't she?
Poor old Madge. Madge O'Neill was her married name, and Madge May was her maiden name, because she was married. She was one of my father's two sisters, Pearl O'Brien was his other sister, and married to a farmer outside the Tighe here. And Madge was a maternity nurse, and she was born in 1916, so she was a maternity nurse, I reckon, into the 40s, and at least. And I was speaking to her son earlier, who said I could go ahead and do the talking for him. So she was a maternity nurse in the Tighe district, and on one occasion she told me herself that she had to go to a townland called Ballyshannon just short of Kilcullen. And the reason for that now I know is that there was another nurse who used to do home births called Nurse Butterfield from Ballytor area, and there's still a pub by that name in Ballytor. And anyway,
is it fair to say Nurse May would have cycled?
She did. She had a bike, a little basket on the front of the bike, and her little bag was on a table in the hallway in the house. And they had a landline because there was no mobile phones, obviously. And she had her little bag, and as soon as she got the call, she just picked up her bag, told her husband where she was off to, and cycled. And on this occasion, she got a call at 2 o'clock in the morning, and she had to cycle at least 15 kilometres out to the house.
And then do her work and then cycle back. Barry, thanks indeed. I'll talk. We're talking to Siobhan de Perry, who's not only an advocate of free birthing, which is deliberately unassisted birth, no medics present, no qualified medics. That's a better description, in fairness. And she just recently had a new baby boy. Congratulations. And we'll be talking to Dermot, her husband, after this break. Joe at rte.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Keep the light out with our new ranges of blackout curtains and blinds, perfect for a peaceful sleep and a brighter start.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Dermot Ling is Siobhan's partner and the father of Turin. People recognise the name from Wexford hurling and football days. They might actually also recognise you as Gizzy, is what you were known at one stage. But Dermot is a well-seasoned sportsman. Dermot, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. What was it like for you? It was just yourself and Siobhan there when the baby was born.
It was, yeah. It was an intense experience from start to finish. You know, even in the lead up to it, I suppose I noticed 2 or 3 days out, my disposition towards even Siobhan and the house just changed a little bit. And I went into a very kind of a practical mindset. I'm aware of free birthers or home birthers whose, you know, husbands and partners might go in emotionally to the situation with them, and they're very much in it with them at an emotional level. And I actually found that I didn't seem to be going that way. I went much more in a kind of a practical, I suppose, taking up the masculine role, like, of making sure the house was warm, making sure the kids were looked after and fed, making sure Siobhan had what she needed, and just the general preparation, really. And that was the only thing that could settle, I suppose, the nervous tension. And the nervous tension, Joe, was, I suppose, a little bit more of, I didn't want to carry, I was very, very aware of not carrying my concerns into the situation, because I didn't want, the more settledness and the more trust that are there, the more flow that can happen. No different than your show, for example. Like, if you're going to be jumpy and you want to get to some point, things get staggered. Whereas when you have trust in the flow of what's coming, then, you know, it tends to flow in that way. And that's why you have the biggest radio show in Ireland. So it's like, that you're applying those same tactics and techniques. You just do the things that you know are going to breed trust into the situation, and that allows facilitates things to flow well.
But then what I would think in a birthing situation, if it was in your situation, it was yourself and Siobhan, the two of you, I would be the weakest link. Did you feel you're the weakest link? Like, have you medical experience? Or
I mean, you've just spoken to Siobhan, so, like, yeah, I'd say you have a good idea that I was the weaker link in it. absolutely, because I don't know what's going on. I mean, Siobhan has that intuition. Siobhan knows what's happening in her body. She knows how things are going. I'm looking at her in what is, like, what you would term distress, what seems like to me is distress, because that's all I can, I don't know what's happening. I don't know if it's pain. It seems like pain, but then when I talk to Siobhan, she'd say it's not pain. So I'm misguided in a sense. So I am the weakest link, because I don't fully know what's going on, so I can only do the things that I can control. I mean, on our first child, on when Ishna came, mm-hmm. I mean, when the person who was there with us at the time said, we need to go to the hospital, I was like, well, hospital's a good place to give birth. Like, let's go. That's fine. I'm not qualified for this job, so maybe we should go to the hospital. But my visit mm-hmm. to the hospital on Ishna and subsequent reading in the meantime, I suppose I realised that no, like, that's not necessarily the best place, and it's much better to place my trust and my faith in Siobhan, and that means letting go of my conditioning. It means letting go of what I understand birth to be, and just really applying the trust to the situation that's required and that Siobhan needs in terms of support. And that's what I did. It was quite effective in the end.
And when Ishna was born, you mentioned at one stage, because you've written about this, you mentioned that after satisfying Tusla's embarrassing inquiries, what were Tusla's embarrassing inquiries?
Well, immediately after Ishna was born, I think Siobhan had gone over 19 hours from the time that her water had broken, and her waters had broken. And so that in Ireland, that's set by, I guess, you know, an actuary in the head of the hospital to say after 19 hours, there's going to be antibiotics administered straight away. In France, that's, I think, 40 hours. So there's an arbitrary amount of time there for, you know, protection against the likes of sepsis. Now, we would have known, and I, you know, mm-hmm. still would very much hold firm on that antibiotics for a newborn child is not good for the child's system. That's there's a developing mm-hmm. system there that's going to deal with the world, and antibiotics put straight and on top of it didn't seem like because there was no, if there was a clear issue, if you could see there was something wrong, if you could see there was a problem somewhere, you say, okay, well, then maybe antibiotics are the thing that we need in that situation. But as it stood, we'd had a natural birth in the hospital. Everything was fine. The baby mm-hmm. was fine. There was no need for antibiotics. So we protected that, and I protected as best I could Siobhan and Ishna to make sure that she got the latch that she needed, that he got that skin time in that first half an hour that's essential. And at that time, the doctors were trying to, you know, pull Ishna away to bring him into a separate room to give him an injection, and it just didn't seem like the most natural thing to do. So Tusla were called. They said that they had, I guess, the hospital's message to us was, well, we decide here, not you.
Okay.
And they were kind of forceful about that, and so they said they had to call Tusla. And once the woman came in from Tusla to question us, I mean, she could see she was in the presence of absolute love at mm-hmm. every single level for child, for each other, just the whole situation. And she seemed embarrassed by it, by her presence, to be honest, because everything was fine. She had to mediate, and we allowed mm-hmm. her and facilitated that mediation, and that was fine. I had absolutely no issue with her being there, but it wasn't, at the same time, it wasn't necessary for the situation.
Okay, but you also write, 6 years, this, which is a description of what happened, and it's very well written. 6 years ago, we blinked at the wrong time, at the right wrong time in home birthing for our eldest boy, Ishna, as we now know. When trust was needed in the natural order of things, we second-guessed ourselves and went to the hospital. Now, truth be told, when the off-duty doctor present in our house insisted we go, I thought it was a fine idea because hospitals seem to be good places to give birth. I often felt like I was the weak link in the chain, which you've referred to earlier. So I agreed with the doc, and Siobhan asked for her deck of cards. Is that a metaphor, or what does that mean?
It's very direct, I suppose. She's calling in her guides. That's a practice that Siobhan would have in situations where she's not sure about outcomes or what mm-hmm. the best practice is for something. She has a couple of decks of cards that she'll consult. She'll draw them and have a look and interpret the mm-hmm. meanings of them. She has that incredible ability to interpret what's happening on the likes of those cards, or what signs are in the ether around her, and she'll follow them. Then now on this occasion, she didn't actually in the end follow them, because we just mm. it was our first child, and it was, you know, you do feel you are very bare in that setting, so as I said, we lost trust. Now it was really beneficial for a third.
Just ask Siobhan, in your case, mm. when you drew the cards, did the cards tell you to go to hospital?
No, patience. That's what I got. I got patience.
What do you mean?
That's what the card said. It said patience. Be patient. You know, like.
And how did I say that? How did I say that to you?
I just—it's an oracle. It's an oracle deck. A friend had posted it to me. The mother deck. And, you know, you're trying to make a decision and you're using anything at your disposal. And you've got one person saying, but my whole feeling was, it's fine. It's just taken ages. And I just needed somebody to say, it's grand, you know. But, like, people were getting worried, like, you know.
But the cards, did the cards tell you to stay or go?
To be patient was to stay. To be patient for the labour.
And who overruled the cards?
I did. It was down to me in the end. In the end, I said, look, because, do you know what I did? I said, we'll go in and get checked out. And if it's grand, we'll come away home again. But little did I realise, they don't. There was no option to get home again. They were like, no, you're staying now. You're dilated. You know, you really lose your authority the minute you go in the door. It was such an education for us, what it was like in the hospital, you know. You're told what to do. I thought if I refused intervention, they'd leave us alone. But they kept asking every 10 minutes, will you not take the expedite, you know, to induce, to expedite? They give you this artificial oxytocin. I said, no, I don't need that. In the midwifery, in the traditional midwifery literature, a first-time birth can take up to 40 hours, and that should be grand without being considered an emergency. But in the Irish hospital, you have something like, you know, 15 hours and then it's an emergency. You know, they have that turnaround and they don't make allowance for a first-time birth, which takes twice as long.
Okay. Megan phoned in, joe@rt.ie. Megan, good afternoon. You're listening to Siobhan and Dermot. Go ahead, Megan.
Hi. Yes. So I think it's really good for women to be supported in their choices. Mm-hmm. And obviously what Siobhan just said about how she went in and she listened to her body and she wanted to get checked over. And then she wasn't supported then in her autonomy. And I think that's why women then consider not seeking medical assistance, because actually in the way the maternity services work at the moment, women aren't supported in being autonomous with their body, and they're infantilized. But the one thing about free birthing is that women need to know that they need to really, really be educated and learn as much as they can about emergency scenarios. And sometimes when things go awry with free birth, it can often be the blood loss after the birth, and also not knowing what to do in emergency scenarios. So ultimately,
do you not think women and pregnant women and have enough to be doing without studying medicine during the 9 months?
No, I think really being
to study to be a doctor takes 7 years. To study to be a consultant obstetrician or gynae takes another 5 or 6 years. That's 12 years. And a woman should be able to become an expert in her own, I know the line about your own body, but a woman's expected to become an expert within the 9 months when she's up to her eyes. And in Siobhan's case, I know Siobhan has two other children and the day-to-day challenges of life. How can every pregnant woman study medicine?
But the thing is, I'm not suggesting they study medicine. I'm not saying they become an expert in every single thing about pregnancy and birth. I'm talking about when you have a routine pregnancy and a routine labour, what can go awry. During pregnancy, it's great to learn about your body. Mm-hmm. It's great to learn about the labour. It's great to open your mind to everything that's going to be
taking place. And it's great during pregnancy. You have enough things going on in your body. It's great.
Have you been a pregnant woman before?
Obviously. I don't know where you're making that point. What's your point you're trying to make there?
Because I'm just highlighting that if you'd let me finish
the point. My point I was making was that during a pregnancy, a woman needs relaxation as well. Should have relaxation. Not a studying for an exam time.
I'd love to say, Joe, like, it's the most enjoyable thing you can do while you're pregnant is learning about your body. Like, the books I had, I tell you, it's fantastic, like, and even if you just get into it at the last trimester, there's loads of time, not a lot to
know.
And Siobhan,
you also know that there's a significant proportion of mothers in this country, unfortunately, that do not know how to read or write, whether you like it or not. That is a core, and it's much higher. Now, I'm not getting into it here because, but I was reading about it recently with the Dublin Adult Literacy. Yes, I was. And I was also reading about the National Literacy. There's this much more people who are illiterate, unfortunately, in this country than we let on. And it's more than 1%. I can guarantee that. It's up around 14%.
You don't have to read. You can talk to other mothers.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
okay.
That's loads of ways to learn. Okay, I suppose the point I'm making is that it's a lovely thing to do. And I think it should be part of the pregnancy
process. If you can,
it's
a lovely thing to do if you can. If you have the resources, if you have the time, if you have the supports, if you have the money, et cetera, et cetera. If you have the accommodation, if you have the
Okay,
let's Sue come in. Sue, your point, please.
Hi there. My name's Sue. I'm a doula and I'm also a health researcher, so I'm speaking from both the experience of supporting women in birth, but also doing research on it. And I have two points. The first one is, when we talk about free birth, we have to understand why more and more women in Ireland are choosing free birth. And that's because, for many women, because they can't access a home birth midwife. So, you know, if they had the choice of having a midwife there, many women would prefer that. Not everybody. Some women would still choose to pre-birth, but many would. So there's a huge issue with the options that are available to women. It basically is hospital or free birth. So that's one thing. Mm. And the other thing, you had a conversation earlier about risk and the risks of free birthing, the risks of home birthing. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to add to that is that there is no risk-free birth. Like, I think Siobhan said that as well, life is risky. But there's actually a lot of risks involved in a hospital birth, especially for the woman.
Okay, take that point. Is a hospital birth more risky than a free birth?
I don't think anybody can answer that question because it's very different risks. And
you're the researcher, the health researcher, and you're a doula. Is a hospital birth more dangerous than a free birth? Do you believe? From your experience.
You really do want me to answer that. So if we look at the statistics, I'm going to answer this as a researcher. If we look at the statistics of unnecessary intervention in a hospital birth and the statistics of negative birth experiences in a hospital compared to the interventions at home and the negative birth experiences at home, the statistics are flawed because many more women birth in hospitals,
but hospital births
come out a lot worse. In regards to women's experiences.
Mm-hmm. And there was 3 weeks of discussion on Liveline about 3 years ago of women with their awful experiences around childbirth in hospital.
Yes, that was a very good show. That was really important that you did that.
It was 15 shows, and it was women who generated that.
Yes.
And Sue, so do you think free birthing from your own experience, where you deliberately do not have any medical presence at the birth, do you think that's going to increase in popularity?
Well, it has been. So lots of us you're saying
the reason it's increasing in popularity because once again you're saying it's the HSE's fault. They've cut back on midwives. Will it increase in popularity by choice? Free birth.
I don't know that because I haven't done research on why women choose free birth. So it's just my personal view based on the women that I've talked to and talking to other doulas. It seems that there is more women who choose it because they can't access a home birth with a midwife. And that includes, for example, women who had a previous cesarean section because they are risked out of the HSE home birth scheme. So nobody who wants a VBAC can do that at home with a midwife, even though research has shown that it's a safe thing to do. So, yes, I do think most women don't choose it because that's their favorite option. It's the best one they can think of, given what they're facing in a hospital.
Okay. And Megan, the same question to you, if I may. Do you believe it is more risky? Is it riskier in a hospital or a free birth / home birth?
So I feel like a home birth and a free birth is a bit different.
Well, I know they are different, don't they? That's
yeah. So if we're comparing a hospital birth and a home birth, the research would support that it's to be safer at home because the intervention that takes place in a hospital can do a lot of harm, and the intervention rates are going up, and our stillbirth rate is not going down, and the outcomes for mum and baby are not improving. So what is all this intervention doing apart from harm?
Why do 99% of women in Ireland choose a maternity hospital?
may not have access to home birth, but also they may have been scaremongered. There's no community service here in Ireland. So then they may often be seeing a doctor for the duration of their pregnancy. And doctors are specialists in higher risk pregnancies and emergency situations. Doctors are amazing. They're fabulous at that. But what doctors aren't great at is a non-interventionist vaginal birth, where actually you don't need to intervene at all. Birth is a normal thing. We've been doing it for thousands of years, you know? And so women don't have the choice.
Yeah, but mortality at birth has decreased dramatically in the last century and more. Infant mortality has decreased dramatically in the last century or more. How did that happen? Well, both.
But obviously, infant mortality may be due to sanitary conditions.
Yeah, lack
food,
of
lack of hospitals,
lack of medicine, lack of access to hospitals. Seriously,
it is the Commonwealth. But can I just say one thing? When women started to birth in hospitals, more women and babies died. We know that for a fact.
Say that again, Megan. Sorry, because you're introducing stats here, which I can't, and I've no one beside
me.
Megan, what was that stat you said? Sorry, that statistic.
When the hospitals are introduced and women were encouraged to come in and give birth in hospitals, more women and babies died at that time.
But that's simply not true. Today, when 99...
No. I'm talking about in the past, because you're saying about in the past.
Well, I'm saying... Okay. I can give you a statistic from Dublin. At the turn of the last century, the beginning of the 20th century, of 50 children born, a significant number of them would have died before the age of one. And if you take a group of 50 people born in Dublin in 1899 and through the early 1900s, if you take a group of 50 of them, more than 20 of them would have been dead by the age 5.
But that's...
Can I please come in?
That's a
stat. I have a really important point to make.
Okay, who's that? Who's that? Sue, is it?
Yes,
Sue,
please.
Go ahead. Sorry, I can't distinguish your voice. Go ahead, Sue. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would love to come in there. So I think if we look at the statistics overall, maternal and baby mortality has decreased. That's the one measure that everybody seems to be obsessing about. And of course, it is the most important one. Mm-hmm. Like, we all want live mamas and babies at the end.
Yeah.
But the thing that totally gets disregarded is the increasing numbers of women who come out of birth traumatized, feeling like a failure, feeling abused, feeling completely horrible about themselves, the effects that has on their relationship with their babies, on their postnatal mental health, the physical effects it has on their bodies when they've had C-sections or inductions or whatever else done. There's a lot of other measures that we could look at that very clearly, and again, this is the researcher speaking and not the birth activist, is like, they're facts. We can look at the numbers. We can look at what it does to women. And we know that over-medicalized hospital births create worse outcomes in that regard.
Yeah, but there's no worse irretrievable outcome than death.
Create more deaths. So we're not talking about free birth because we don't have the numbers on it. Nobody can tell you.
I know that.
We don't have it, so we can't talk about it. But home births are just as safe for babies and safer for mothers. That's the statistics on home birth
with an extraordinarily low cohort to go on about free births.
Not if we look at international research, so really not. There's solid evidence to show that home births with midwife in attendance are safer. That's not something I'm making up. I can back it up with all the research.
Okay, well, please supply us, and we'll because the program's going to go on, obviously. But we're not talking about home births. We're talking about free birth, deliberately unassisted birth at home, deliberately unassisted, where you do not want any medical assistance. That's
or you
home
can't
birth.
Have one. Yes, or now, you can't have one there.
Well, if you can't have one, you have other options, which I know you don't agree with. But if you deliberately decide not to have medical assistance, that's a free birth, isn't it? Okay. I don't. Do you really believe there's enough free births in Ireland to actually form any judgment about the outcomes?
No, not if we're looking at, you know, statistical relevance. Of course not, compared to the hospital birth.
And Trina, I presume
so. The answer to that is we don't know, but we do have lived experience of women who have free birth.
Okay,
well, and doulas who've supported
in,
it.
There's a lot of positive
experiences.
Sue, in Siobhan's case, she said that she herself and Dermot were within half an hour of a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if something goes wrong. But the mother is taking, you call an ambulance, if you're lucky enough, you'll get an ambulance, or you jump in the car. Is that it?
Yes, you do. And you see,
no, you do,
it's again
you do, you
about
do,
understanding
sorry, you,
what
you,
could happen.
You do what? You do what?
Well, you either get in the car yourself, if you can, or you call an ambulance. And
if,
the important
hang on,
thing
Sue,
to understand
Sue,
about that
hang
is
on,
how long does it take
hang
for
on,
something to
hang
go
on.
Wrong?
If you have a car. If you have a car, unfortunately, I know the world.
Now, don't tell me how many women choose free birth if they don't have a car.
Well, okay, well, I'm just saying your assumptions all the time. Your assumption is
women aren't stupid, you know. We have a plan for what we're going to do. And literally, every free birther prepares for what they're going to do.
Let's not try to weaponize this in male versus female. I'm just making the point. The assumption is, and by the way, the assumption is on every radio and television program, every radio and television ad, the assumption is there is at least one car. More than likely two, in every single household in Ireland, which there isn't by a long shot. Stay with us for after this break, please.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Trina, good afternoon. You're listening to the discussion about free birth. Go ahead, Trina, please.
Hey, Joe. I think it's great that people have choice and people giving birth have choice. But I suppose in my case, without medicine, I wouldn't be here and my daughter wouldn't be here. I had two pregnancies. Unfortunately, I lost my son at 20 weeks. But I had no idea that I was fully dilated, so unfortunately I couldn't continue with the pregnancy. Again, without being in a hospital at that time and having antibiotics, I wouldn't be here. And then for my daughter, I had, like, in the space of about 5 minutes, I had a massive antepartum hemorrhage, and my daughter had to be delivered within an hour. And then I had a postpartum hemorrhage. And my daughter was born at 25 weeks, again, without the support of midwives, doctors and nurses. She wouldn't be here and I wouldn't be here. But they were talking about, you know, like the other people were talking about women's intuition. I felt completely supported by the midwives in the hospital. They asked me, how did I feel? They supported me. They knew that... Unfortunately, skin to skin wasn't possible because my daughter had to be intubated straight away.
Okay.
But within an hour, I had a lactation consultant help me start hand expressing breast milk because they knew that our wishes were to feed our daughter breast milk and to be able to start that journey.
Which is highly recommended and encouraged.
Yeah. And I also have to say, with the hospital that I was in, we were treated in two hospitals for the 6 months that she was in hospital, but they treat breast milk as medicine. They always went by my intuition if I felt that there was something wrong with the care of my daughter. And again, without antibiotics, she had, I'd say, about 12 courses of antibiotics over her stay in hospital. She had blood cell transfusions. She had steroids. She had morphine. She had medication that you wouldn't imagine a baby would need. But again, without medicine and without science, you know, we wouldn't have her, and we're very lucky to have her. And also, my wife wouldn't have her wife here with the daughter, again, without medicine and without science. Mm-hmm. Again, people, you know, like...
And Trina,
had
you heard of the free birthing movement? It's not home birthing, it's free birthing.
I have. Okay. To be honest, yeah. If people, you know, choose to do that, and a great, like, I suppose, again, people have choice, but, you know, I would never, you know, like, I had, toyed with the idea of possibly having a home birth. But, you know, it wasn't an option. And to be honest, it wasn't an option for me. And if I had decided to go against that advice, like, I would be dead. I didn't know that I was going to have an antepartum hemorrhage, do you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. And that's good news all around, but thank you for that contribution. Trina, Kira, sorry for holding you. Kira, your free birthing, your opinion and position, I presume, as a lot of people have heard about it before today, but listening to the conversation.
I have had 5 children, so all of them being in hospital. I started off at the age of 36, having my first. I think people should have a choice, but an informed choice. I think they should know the risks. Like, I know they say there's a lot more intervention in hospitals, but of course we're not all in our 20s giving birth now. I had my first child at 36, my last child at 46. So, and my first child had a massive postpartum hemorrhage, and obviously needed medical intervention. But I think it's like people are putting hospitals down too much that women are not listened to. I was listened to in every single pregnancy in the coom. I thought the support was great. I postnatal depression throughout my last 4 pregnancies. You know, and each birth was different. Every birth is going to be different, you know. So I wasn't forced to have a C-section on my last one. I was asked, did I want one? I said no. I have 4 other kids at home. I'd be cooking the dinner when I go home and doing the laundry. And you know, I thought like they're great for supporting breastfeeding in the hospital, because you might find that difficult when you're on your own with no support at home if you pre-birth, because it's not as easy as you think the first time round. You know, it takes a lot of work. It's like my daughter, you know, was screaming for days and days and I wanted to give up. Luckily my Arabic husband was like, no, you can do this. They do this all the time in my country, it's a normal thing. And I successfully ended up breastfeeding my 5 kids for 2 years each. So I think that people are very quick to put hospitals down and push the negativity in the hospital. But you know, like on my last child, somebody said to me, oh, I want to be induced at 38 weeks. Oh, no, we don't do that here. I said, well, can I speak to your boss, please? And it was no problem because, you know, I was on crutches. I couldn't walk this, you know, was 46 years old. So I think that people need to stop being so negative. I mean, I think women are very negative towards each other. You know, oh, you had a C-section, like she gave up, you know, on giving birth. Or, oh, well, I had a home birth, like your birth doesn't count because you gave birth in a hospital. Or you had an epidural. I mean, I had some of mine epidural, some of them not. Some of them were too quick. And people that say that labour isn't painful, I am sorry, but I've done it 5 times. And I begged them in the coom for a paracetamol on my 4th child. And they said, by the time I actually write the prescription, the baby will be out. Because my 3rd child, I was 6 minutes in the delivery room. My 4th child, I was 20 minutes in the delivery room. And it is painful. And people have to understand that each person's experience is different. And the level of support each person will have at home is different. From their spouse is different. You know, and I think it's like great for people who want to do free birthing. But they have to understand the risks and they have to accept the consequences. And you know, it has to make sense. You know, it has to make
and Kira, just
sense for them.
2 things. One, I mentioned earlier about the one caller suggested women could read up on this during the pregnancy. And I said 15% of people in the country are below a literacy level that allows them to access basic written information. I was wrong. The actual figure is 18%. So it is a significant. And then the number of households in the country that don't have access to a car, I know it's hard to believe, is around 10%. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Did at one stage, just to make those almost sideline points, but did you, when you were in the maternity hospital, did they ask for any feedback given that you had 5 children?
Yes, on my last birth, master of the coom came in. And he said, you know, I'd just like to have a chat with you if that's okay. How did you get on in your birthing experience?
Great.
So I explained to him the birthing experience I had over my 5 different children. The first one was horrific. But, and of course, I was very stressed coming into the other pregnancies all the time. But the nurses understood that and the doctors understood that. I remember crying on my 5th child going, you know, I'm really scared. I can't do this. Yeah. And the midwife talking to me and she said, you know, this is your 5th child. You're being induced at your request.
Okay.
We can give you the epidural now when you're getting the induction drip. You won't feel any pain at all. And I was like, really? And she said, yeah, yeah. So I just lay back and let the thing do its work. And out came baby because it was my fifth child. So I think, you know, it's just people have to realise that, you know, everybody's different. Now, people should know as well that a lot of the care in the coom, I know, is midwife-led care. So if you're in a position where, like I wasn't because of my age, if you're young enough and healthy enough and there's nothing wrong, you're going to be seeing midwives all the way through. You're going to be giving birth, as I did with many of my kids. A midwife is there. You won't see a doctor at all. So it just happens to be in a hospital setting where the support is. So you can see a midwife. And if you do have problems in your birth, they have, I think it's called birth reflections in the coom, where you can go back into them within 10 years and go, look, I don't understand why this happened or why that happened. Can you please explain to me? Because I know women are made to feel like they couldn't push, or they did something wrong, or did they not exercise enough during the pregnancy. I think people are pushing too much mentally on women
And I'd also
say there's a certain way to give birth, and that's just so wrong. I think women are just so horrible to each other. I think everybody you know, goes through the process. Yeah. They've produced a miracle, and some people had a great breastfeeding journey, and some people don't. And you have to understand.
But
I'd also
say, in fairness to the other and you as well, the other callers, that when we did that 3 weeks, which is about 3 years ago, again propelled by listeners about difficult experiences in maternity hospitals, before, during, and after. As far as I know, there was only one maternity hospital that came to us and said, can we have the tapes of those programmes and can we play them to our students, our medical students and the midwifery?
Yeah.
And that was the Coombe Hospital, in fairness.
Yeah.
Okay, Ciara, go to Mila Mahogat. Trina, go to Mila Mahogat. Siobhan de Pere, thanks indeed. And Siobhan, above all, good health to you and Dermot and Tiran and Ishna. And then you've a third child. I don't have your third child's name, but...
Tiran
is the new baby, and Ivishna.
Tiran and Eru is our daughter.
Eru. Oh, that's a name that came up yesterday as well. Siobhan, good to meet them all. Get a good health. Joe at rt.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Keep the light out with our new ranges of blackout curtains and blinds, perfect for a peaceful sleep and a brighter start.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Robbie Burns. Robbie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Now, the reason I want to hear about, I want to hear it because of your contact us and the seriousness of it, but too, it very nearly happened to me last week on the Dart. What happened to you, Robbie?
Well, I was coming back from Bray on Saturday the 6th, and I was waiting at the platform. I was sitting there waiting for the train to Connolly. And a young boy came up to me and he had a pizza box and he offered me the pizza. He said, would you like a pizza?
Okay.
I said, no, thank you. I'm fine. Thanks very much.
Okay. Yeah.
And he just chucked the box on the platform and walked away and sat down with his three other friends who were there. I picked up the box. It was an empty box.
So
I brought it back to him and I said, put it in the bin. You know, put it in the bin.
Okay.
And he told me in no uncertain terms what to do with the box.
Yeah. And yourself.
And myself,
yeah. So they were deliberately acting the maggot, offering you an empty pizza box you want. He was hoping you'd take the box, open it and discover that it was empty, so you'd have
to... Well, it's fine, that's okay, you know, I've seen the jokes in that, but it got very abusive then when I brought the box back. And the three teenage girls under 18 and a young boy, the four of them started to round on me. And the abuse was unbelievable, really was unbelievable.
Now,
the language of them.
Where are we now? Are we on the Dart at this stage?
I'm still on the platform.
You're still on the platform. Okay. So what did they do to you on the platform?
Then he started throwing chips at me. Mm-hmm. And I went over and I said, if you do that again, you know, what I wouldn't do with the chips.
Okay.
But anyway, they followed me onto the Dart. They came on the same carriage.
Yeah.
And again, they rounded on me and started abusing me. And the young boy would try to kick me and punch me.
Oh, for God's sake.
And I'm saying a very young, very small boy. And then he said he had a knife and he was going to stab me. Okay. And there were four of them there. And the abuse was unbelievable. Like, and then they started another passengers who...
But Robbie, just in terms of our listeners, you sound extraordinarily young. Can you give us a picture of yourself, please, in terms of age grouping and are you small, tall?
I'm tall. I'm about 6 foot tall and I'm 72.
You're 72, which is a great age. Still young, he says. Yeah. But, okay, the other, they would have, these 14 or 15 year olds, yeah, they would have known they're looking at somebody who was, could be old enough to be their grandfather.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And they start throwing, they start attacking you in a dart carriage. Forward.
They started abusing me in the dart carriage, and the young boy was trying to kick me and punch me, and I was pushing him away. I told him,
are you
to go
standing,
away.
Just, are you standing or sitting at this stage?
I'm standing, yeah. But it was getting busy because the match was on. It was about 6 o'clock Saturday when the Leinster match was on with Leicester. Yeah, so I was getting busy.
Okay, so you're standing. And remember, because this is what happened to me last week on the dart. I got on. Mm-hmm. Now it's nothing. It's a grain of sand compared to the desert that you went through, Robbie. But I got on with a companion, male companion of mine. We were going into the city centre. Love using public transport. Got on the dart. It was, wasn't crowded by any stretch, but I was conscious I was in a closed carriage. There was only one way in and one way out. And there was about six of this exact same age group, and they had occupied about 12 seats, had their feet up, and every one of them had their feet in the opposite seat, and there was no way, maybe I'm a wimp, there was no way I was going to challenge him, because I realised if I had challenged him, that one, I would have been trapped in a carriage, and the next stop was 9 or 10 minutes away. But anyway, so you're standing there, and and they start, these 14, 15 year olds start attacking physically, and one of them kicking a grandfather figure, if you don't mind me using that phrase.
That's correct. Yeah, I was pushing him away. I just told him to go away. Another passenger came in on the train then, and they started, still continued on at me, abusing me. And he actually pushed the young boy away because he said he was fed up listening to him and to go away. And I moved up the carriage to the other end, and they followed me up there and continued to round on me and berate me. And on the way up,
give us a sense, Robbie, of what they're saying to you.
Well, you know yourself, I'm an old so-and-so, and swearing at me, call me a baldy old so-and-so and whatever, you know.
Good luck. My God.
They were abusing other people on the way up the carriage. People were saying to them, behave yourself. And they would start on them and tell them, well, you mind your own business. What are you looking at? All this sort of stuff. It was just unbelievable. Like the abuse, there was from, like, there were young girls, three young girls and a very young boy, and they caused mayhem, really mayhem on that. And they followed me up and they continued again, and they were fighting, just having a go at as many people as they could. So I was standing again, and they rounded on me again, and like, people were looking aghast at what was going on. There were the girls were like, they were as bad as the boy was. He was violent, and the girls were verbally abusive. And then suddenly this large guy, he was about 6'4", but 18 stone. He just came through the crowd and he said, I'm sick of this, S-H-I-T-E.
Yeah.
And he grabbed three of them and he threw them off the train at a station. I don't know which station it was, but he put three of them off. The fourth girl,
and how
she
did Robbie, how did he get three of them off the train?
He just pushed them off. He just all standing there and at the door, and he just came through the crowd. He said, I'm sick of this shite, and he pushed them out onto the platform. And the fourth girl, she couldn't get off the train, and she panicked. She was running up and down the carriage in a panic because she was...
Okay, there's a line gun on me, I think, for a sec. Okay, well, I have a break to take anyway, haven't I? Yes, we'll come back after this break and back with Robbie Burns.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
So, Robbie, the three of them are now off the train. There's at least one left. What happened?
Well, she just disappeared and hid somewhere. She was very quiet. She wasn't talking anymore. She was afraid that she'd be stranded, and her gang wasn't with her. Okay. So she panicked. I saw her got off the train, and she was desperately trying to ring, obviously trying to ring them.
Okay.
And that was it. I just went on, and the train was packed.
What was the reaction of the other passengers to this?
They cheered and applauded the guy who had thrown them off. There was a big round of applause and a big cheer.
Okay. And how was he? Was he frightened? Did he didn't sound frightened from what
no,
he did.
He's a big guy. He wasn't frightened. No, he wasn't frightened at all. He was the same. He's about 18 stone. He's a very big guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
He was about 40.
Okay. And how did you report it? How could you report it?
Well, I rang the customer service just to tell them that the antisocial behaviour. I see it every day. Now, I travel quite a lot on the Lewis and the Dart. And I just see things every day, antisocial behaviour. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, Ian wrote there and say, if the listener is aware of the carriage they travel on, we may be able to download CCTV.
Yes.
It's very important. Did you report any incident to report? Did you report it, or did you feel up to reporting it, or able to report?
I reported to the customer care and the Aaron Road Aaron, who looked after the Dart. And I actually noticed there was no security, absolutely no security on the platforms all the way in. I got off at Grand Canal Dock, and there was no security people on the train or on the platforms anywhere.
Okay.
On a busy day, like it's a very busy day with lots of people.
You would still travel, I hope.
I've just been away in Monkstown today and travelled back. Just to talk to you, Joe.
Okay, good. Well done, Robbie. And in the quote from your famous namesake, Robert Burns, I presume are you called after him, or just it's a coincidence?
Well, I don't know. It's a coincidence, probably, yeah.
He has it's one of his most famous quotes you probably know. As man's humanity to man makes countless thousands mourn. And that is just an awful scenario where you're in. But thank you so much for telling us, Robbie. And safe travelling. That's all I can say to you, Robbie. That's Robbie Burns. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Take it easy.
You too. And that's a 72-year-old man. Obviously, thankfully, like most 72-year-olds, hale and hearty. But as he said, he looked like their grandfather. And they still abused him and kicked him and threw food at him in a Dart carriage. Okay, I mentioned this a few days ago, and we have to get to it today. Stephanie McNamara. Stephanie, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
It's an incredible story that two of your uncles. We were talking about shipping last week and various tragedies. Tell us the story of, first of all, going back to 1919. The Irish Pine was a cargo ship built in 1919. And when did your first relative die?
Okay. It was called the West Hematite, I think. And then Frank Aiken went over to America and he chartered two ships. The Irish Pine, the West Hematite was one. And they changed the name to the Irish Pine. And it was a cargo ship going over to Halifax in Canada.
Okay.
And my uncle, who was 28 when he died, was a third officer on the Irish Pine.
And what was his name, Stephanie?
Mikey Cusick.
And Mikey Cusick. Okay, he was 28.
He was 28.
And he had children, and he was lost at sea.
He was married and had one daughter, Breed.
Now the three Irish missionaries. I don't think many people know the story. Do you know that three Irish missionary priests were murdered in Korea? In war. Tell us their story, please. It's Father Pat Brennan, Father Jack O'Brien, and Tom Cusack. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Well, before that, could I just say, Joe? Seven Irish priests were murdered, were killed in the Korean War.
Wow.
There were Columban fathers who had been working in Korea.
Yeah.
And now, because they were all in South Korea, but Tommy and Jack O'Brien and Pat Brennan were down in Mokpo in the south of South Korea.
Okay.
The others were up in the north of South Korea. But on the 17th of July, 1950, a man called MacDonald came from the American embassy to Mokpo and he said, let's get out, that it's dangerous to be here. And Monsignor Brennan was the man in charge and he looked around and he told various people to go here and collect and go there. But one man looked at him and he said, are you not coming? And Pat said, no, he said, I'm staying, it goes with the job. Mm-hmm. And then Tommy, my uncle, said, I'm staying too. And then Jack O'Brien said, me too. But, Joe, yeah. Jack O'Brien, like Tommy, my uncle, was 15 years in Korea and he was a parish priest and had commitments. Jack O'Brien was 32. He had spent 6 months in Korea learning the language, had no obligation, no commitment, and that man stayed as well. So the rest left then. And on the 4th of August, no, before the 4th of August, the week or two before it, they were arrested and brought to jail. And then they were transferred from the jail in Mokpo to Gwangju. Now, Monsignor Brennan was a big man. He said he was 150 pounds. Mm-hmm. And they were brought on a motorbike, the three of them on the one motorbike, which, you know, we often smile about that. But they were kept in Gwangju jail then for some weeks. Mm-hmm. And then they met, there was an American soldier called Alexander Macaronis who wrote the story of them being in jail with him.
And are they, and I'm a bit stuck for time, Stephanie, but first of all, there is, and I'll tweet it now after the programme, there is a whole story about Columban martyrs. Like, there was a significant number of Columban priests murdered in various countries, but including Korea. Is there a memorial to your uncles?
In Korea, there is. When we went out there in 2013 and they unveiled a monument to the Irish who died, these were soldiers as well, who died during the war in Korea. And I actually got to be part of the people who unveiled that monument. And they are very well remembered.
And is there a memorial here?
No.
And do we know where they're buried, where their remains are?
Tommy and Monsignor Brennan and Jack O'Brien were killed at the massacre at Tejon.
Who perpetrated that massacre, Stephanie?
North Koreans. And there were between 5,000 and 6,000 people killed at that over a weekend at that massacre. Okay. Now, the priests were held in a monastery with other, what they called, political prisoners. And when the North Koreans would be flying overhead or whatever, they would put these guys up on the roof because they knew they wouldn't be bombed.
As barriers, okay.
But they were killed on the 24th of September, and the bodies of the people who were killed in the monastery were put into three disused wells. And two of those wells were emptied straight away, and people came to identify dead people.
I'm over time, Stephanie, but we look at the savagery still going on in the world today. Horrific, horrific. Good to meet Stephanie McNamara. Owen McLachlan was the producer today, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.